T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, let's get somebody on that might have a much better understanding of what we're all dealing with here in society. We bring in Dr. Rowley on the Harbor One Hotline. Dr. Christopher Rowley is from Beth Israel. Dr. Rowley, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
I know things are crazy with you guys right now. We keep on hearing Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx and others talk about how we can't really determine where we're going with this until we have enough data. So with the data that we have right now, do you have any idea where we are and where we're going with this?
I think that is the still the number one question, where are we? And that is totally dependent on our capabilities of testing. We've heard this for weeks now, that the CDC testing was inadequate, and then other places needed to get their testing up and running. And I think just in the Boston area now, we finally are seeing a large number of tests being performed. And I believe the latest number is up to about 29,000 tests have been performed in this area.
Yeah.
So once we get everybody tested, then we'll know where we are. Then we'll see whether we're on the trajectory that Italy is on. We'll see whether we're on the trajectory that New York City is on, or Seattle. But until we know that, until everybody that we think needs to be tested is tested, we still are at a loss as to where we are.
You know, Doc, you know, it's hard to kind of sometimes wrap your arms around, you know, everything that's going on, because I just look at situations like in 2009 when the 5,000, and here we are with less than 500,000 people infected, and the entire world is shut down. You know, nobody can go to work. Societies, you know, people can't earn a living. You know, the economy is taking a hit. What is the difference between the two, between the 2009 swine flu and the coronavirus of 2020?
I think the difference, the one obvious difference is the ability of this virus to be transmitted so effectively when people have basically very little to no symptoms at all. And so in that scenario, you just have no real chance to get ahead of it. And so that's why what we are considering, you know, rather drastic measures of shutting down society to a large degree is really the only way to get a handle on this. And if you look at the situation from China, it was in January, the third week of January, that Wuhan, China, shut down basically completely, much more draconian steps than we have had here. And they're looking maybe in the next week or so, April 8th or April 10th, to consider reopening that city. And that was the only way to get ahead of it there. So I think, while we can be hopeful that things are going to be different here, we don't have that information that it's going to be anything other than a prolonged, series of shutting down societies in order to get ahead of this.
So, Doctor, like you said, China kind of reopened some things. Is it important to pay attention to what happens there now to see if there's a new spike? Is that a scary possibility?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely crucial. I know they're restricting visitors from coming into China, but I think seeing what happens when people who've been largely homebound for the past couple of months start reintegrating in society, I think that's going to be completely crucial.
You're in the hospital every single day. We keep on hearing stories of healthcare workers who are contracting the virus. What kind of strain does that put on and what you're dealing with? And if healthcare workers have it, are they all being tested?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's really confusing and difficult to know where the healthcare workers are being exposed. You clearly are exposed in society as we have community spread, But when a healthcare worker comes into this environment here, by nature of our work, we're much closer in terms of physical proximity. We don't have those 6 feet of distance between our colleagues typically. And so there's a great deal of stress about transmission between healthcare workers or from patients or to patients. And so that's a very, very stressful time. So yes, healthcare workers are a priority to be tested. And they basically go to the top of the list, because both keeping them healthy is going to be essential to us fighting it, but also essential to our patients so that we keep them healthy during the fight.
Okay, so we're talking to Christopher Rowley from Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital. Now, so Doc, two questions for me. One, so we understand how you can catch it. Now, once you have it, how do you treat it? And are some people, easily, cured compared to others? And what are those differences look like?
Sure. Yeah, the vast majority of people fortunately do well. The pretty reliable data globally says that 80% of people will have a self-limited course. They may feel lousy during that period, but they'll do okay. About 20% of people will likely require hospitalization, and then some subgroup of that, maybe 5% of people, will require intensive care level of their hospitalization. And so the groups that are obvious that we know, older aged individuals over the age of 60 are vulnerable, and those with chronic medical conditions are particularly at risk, patients who are receiving chemotherapy or other medications for chronic conditions. But the other kind of variable that we don't have ability to predict is why we're seeing these stories nationwide of these young people who are dying from this illness. And that's what we don't know, who of that group is particularly vulnerable. Because while we say it's the extremes, mostly old people and those with comorbidities, you absolutely are seeing young people doing really poorly with this infection as well.
So the other thing was just that there are, like, we started the show talking about, like, I went to the store this morning and I just figured, okay, I'm just going to hold my breath. I don't have a mask on, and then I'll be fine. Right. I mean, it seems crazy, but I've heard a lot of different, variables as far as what people can do to not catch it. So just correct me if I'm wrong. If I walk into a store and if I hold my breath, am I okay?
Well, there was a lot of confusion initially whether this was truly what you consider an airborne transmission of a virus versus a droplet. And it's largely been thought now through the CDC and the WHO that we're talking about a droplet infection. And that's a typical influenza, whereas it's somebody who's in close proximity to you generating aerosols which transmit it to you. So you're likely going to be fine if you hold your breath going through there. That being said, there's also the presence of what they call fomites, the ability of the virus to live on different materials. And it looks like the virus can stay on materials and then get you infected after, many, many days. There's one report from the CDC suggesting it could be over weeks that it is on inert surfaces that you could get from grabbing a door handle or
that's why you wash your hands, right?
That's why you're washing your hands all the time. That's correct.
So, Doc, there's been a lot of talk, obviously, the economy here. President Trump talking about Easter, maybe opening it back up. One of the discussions that's come up, and given where the economy could be 3 or 4 or 5 months from now, and maybe you saying that maybe the young kids, maybe with people without pre-existing conditions are coming down with it, and that's scary. Maybe that answers this question. But the thought of bringing the economy back and pre-existing conditions, people that are vulnerable, kind of remaining under quarantine, but younger, healthier people coming back to work, is that just a no-go, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think, clearly the decision makers will have to decide that what's best for society. But from a strictly public health point of view, the younger people being largely immune to it and being the kind of the method by which it's going to be passed to the older people seems like a recipe for disaster. It's the younger people who seemingly aren't infected at all yet probably are carrying the virus and transmitting it on to everybody else, which is really going to set us back if we loosen the restrictions too early.
So how long do you wait then? Is it zero deaths? Is it zero cases? Is it until you find a vaccine? Because we know how far off that is.
Yeah, right. The vaccine, as you state, is going to be a long time away. You need to have turned the corner. It needs to be fewer infections than the days previous. And at some point when we think we're at a place where they are declining substantially and that people can still maintain some degree of social distancing, it's probably a ways off still.
Can you build immunity to it? In other words, if you have it, do we know that yet, that you can't get it again?
We don't know that yet. We presume there will be likely some antibodies you'll develop, which will be possibly partially protective, but we don't know that information.
No. So there are companies right now that are testing a vaccine. We have to wait for the FDA, and that takes a long time, and we need to go through the trials. So we're hearing about some medicines that are being used right now, the hydroxychloroquine, which is a malaria drug that's been used for a long period of time. Would you suggest or recommend to any of your patients, since we don't have the luxury of a long-term trial and FDA approval, to try some of these other medications that may be working in smaller samples?
Yeah, so here at Beth Israel and across all of the medical centers in Massachusetts, those trials are actually ongoing. So when patients are admitted with COVID-19, they are going to have those opportunities to see if these medications work or not. So they're actually, there are protocols in place across all of the institutions to use these medications in different different scenarios than they've previously been used. Exactly right. So both there's some HIV medications that people are proposing may be effective. There's the hydroxychloroquine that you mentioned. And then there's the other one that you may or not heard about, remdesivir, which is a trial which many of the institutions in Boston and the surrounding area have access to as well.
So just real quickly, the symptoms are what?
So the first symptoms typically seem to be some people are developing a sore throat, definitely a dry cough, and then some degree of fever. Over the next couple of days, I've heard many reports of people then having a loss of appetite and an inability to smell or taste food correctly. And some smaller number of people seem to have some GI upset, which happens after that.
Go ahead, Glenn.
So if somebody has what might just be strep throat or they have symptoms of the flu, is it better for them to go to the hospital or is it better to stay home and quarantine themselves? Because if they go to the hospital, maybe they pick it up there.
Yeah, that's a great question. What's happening right now, because we don't have widespread testing available for everybody, largely if you called your primary care office or you called an urgent care center, they would say if you're doing fine, you may have COVID-19, but you know, just stay home and you know, talk to your provider to see if we have testing available for you eventually, because that's the only way we're going to figure it out long term, what's best for you, what's best for your family, when we know who is positive for COVID-19. If you have something else, which is a child with strep throat, which is a little bit different, this intense sore throat, oftentimes they can see some exudate in the back of their throat, then clearly the child needs to be treated for strep throat. But it is right now probably not in the best interest of the whole hospital system if you have some very mild symptoms to be rushing into the emergency department.
But people panic, as you know, Doc. They panic and they hear everything about COVID-19 and they think what they've got is COVID-19.
And we just don't have the capacity to be testing everybody right yet. But hopefully that'll be changing within the coming weeks. For sure.
Doc, Dr. Fauci said he believes this thing could be cyclical. And I'm just curious, are we living with this now in the future? Do you think this comes back again in the fall, winter time?
Yeah, winter turns into spring and summer, we'll be having the warmer weather. As just like seasonal influenza changes in the summertime, it likely will be that this may decline in the number of cases over the summer. The concern, I think, for those of us in infectious disease is that as the fall happens, then we start seeing cases again. And this is all because we will not have the vaccine for the next, 12 to 18 months. It seems like, from what I've read about the virus and its genetics, it doesn't seem to be mutating quickly. And so maybe if we have a vaccine available in 18 months, it's going to be a durable vaccine. And so that we can all be vaccinated and protected against this in the future.
Dr. Christopher Rowley, you've been great in answering all these questions. I hope we can keep the door open and have conversations down the road because we may be dealing with this in our lives for some time. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Doc.
Unbelievable. Giving you some answers there of some of the questions that are out there. And I think the biggest problem is with in sports, you know, it's almost like when you talk about a guy gets injured in baseball, you want a date when he's going to be able to come back. The problem is we have no date when we have an end date to all of this.
No.
When we can kind of move on.
And he talked about, you know, and again, when I asked him, you know, when is it, you know, zero deaths, zero cases, and he said, we got to see those numbers go down, and that's just not happening. Today, MassHealth came out with their coronavirus update. Up to 3,240 people have tested positive. That's 823 new cases. I believe the new cases yesterday was in that mid-500 range. So it has jumped to 823. And I believe 10 new deaths as well. Now, there's 29,000 tests done. As the doctor said, that's 5,000 more tests than yesterday.
That's why.
So 823 new cases. There were 5,000 tests. That's why you see a big jump. But, again, there are a lot of people. You see it all the time. I'm getting texts even during this interview. You know, I've been trying for 10 days. People texting me, trying for 10 days, 12 days. You know, I have the symptoms. Been a bad 10 days. Don't feel good. Can't get tests. You know, and this is – so there's a lot more than that out there. And you wonder – you'll find out what this number is. We're at 3,240 people right now. You can almost guarantee right now in the state of Massachusetts, it's got to be like probably 7,000, 8,000 people at least with this. In other words, another 4 or 5 that aren't even tested yet.
So
right?
The more tests that become available, the numbers are going to go up.
Of course they are.
And it's going to make it very difficult, I think, for Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NHL to sit there and say, okay, we can go back to work, because what people are going to be looking at is numbers that are going up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.